The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here today with longtime friend and editor of WashTech, Nick Wakeman. Nick, welcome back to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Good to be here.
Always fun. Always fun. To give people a little bit of background, if they don't happen to know who you are, then number one, they should shoot themselves, but educate them for a sec.
Yeah, I'm the editor of Washington Technology, and we are a online publication that covers government contractors, primarily in the IT systems integration space. We sort of venture, you know, that's a very broad space, so there's a lot to write about there. I've been with WTE for 21 years, believe it or not.
Wow.
And the editor.
You go back to John Sanders and Esther?
Oh, yeah. John Sanders and Esther were still there when I started.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I love John. I mean, I love both of them. John Sanders is a great guy.
I co-wrote the first circulation audit for Washington Technology with Tim Carney and John Long.
Oh, yeah.
I got dispensation from FCW to bring John over for a Saturday afternoon. We brainstormed out what the questions should be on the audit for. That was a blast.
Oh, that's great. We have a long hit. That's one thing I like about, I mean, WT's been here, you know, a long time.
Yeah.
It was 10, 20, I mean, I think in 86 is when it was founded. So.
Yeah. So a year before Federal Computer Week, actually.
Yes.
So, yeah. And remains, I think, the only publication really dedicated to government contracting.
I think so. I mean, we sort of have, you have a couple different, like, social media platforms or networking platforms.
Sure,
that do news and things like that, but...
Some of those I find have been associated with particular companies selling stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Immix, for example, their blog is wonderful.
Right.
And gives a lot of great information, but they're a distributor.
Yeah. So. Yeah. If you ever wanted to do a show on how the media world has changed, you know, you could get a good panel in here. Because what you're talking about when you see companies like Immix and, you know, others do these sort of custom pieces. And there's the quality of it. It can be pretty good.
Yeah.
But it's not independent, of course. But it also, from my perspective, it's other things to compete with just for people's time and attention. So we gotta.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing my newsletter on and off since '91 or '92. I've been writing for you for 10 years. I've been here for 12 years.
You're a diversified media conglomerate.
Books. yes, Mark Press. all right, on to the meteor stuff here.
Yes.
Give me your thoughts on the current trends here, and start pretty much anywhere you want. I mean, we have GDIT and CSRA, and the 2 weeks before that, CSRA bought Praxis.
Yeah, it's the M&A world is really heated up. I mean, last year I think we had about 100 deals in the market that closed. I think this year will be at least that much. That would surprise me. You know, you have these really big deals. I mean, GD CSRA is huge. You know, we're in the process of Vencore and DXC and Keypoint Solutions coming together. This is a little bit of our area. You know, Northrop is buying Orbital, but that's still a big deal. And you're seeing this in, scale all of a sudden is important again at a certain level. I'm not sure if it's necessary scale that serves the customer that much. I'm not sure. I think the jury's out on whether, bigger is better from the customer perspective.
Well, we've seen, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. We've seen this before. Companies that feel like they need to grow and 3 to 5 years later, they jettison units of the acquired company.
Yeah, there's a cycle there.
Yeah, for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's not a cultural fit. Sometimes it's just not a strategic fit.
Yeah, and sometimes I think it's, as one person is, just, it's like financial engineering. Kind of, you know, for the public companies, you're serving your shareholders with these deals, whether you're acquiring or divesting.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, this, I was here before a lot of this market was on a quarterly reporting basis.
Right.
And you know, you caught kind of the tail end of that, too.
Yeah.
But it was very, very different then.
Yes.
You pursued very specific vehicles and very specific niches in the market, and you didn't really worry about growth out of that.
Right.
You know, if an area was, you know, computer security started getting hot in 93, 94, but it wasn't funded for the next 15 years. So who gives,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I think you still see a lot of those kinds of deals when you get down to the small and mid-tier companies. I think they're being much more, their motivation is different than what like the really big companies do, because, you know, they're private, so they're looking at, oh, we see growth in this market over here. We want to get in there, and they're not necessarily making acquisitions and then, you know, sucking out the costs and things like that to, you know, boost their profits for shareholders. They're more looking at, oh, we got a position to get in growth here, so they can move faster and take advantage of the growth we're seeing. I mean, with the budget situation, I mean,
people see
a lot of opportunity.
My favorite speaking gigs are for small business, so I've done. 3 or 4 for AFSEA. I love speaking to those events. The ones that really get me moving, though, are the events that are not public events. They're private, invite only, and on rare occasion, they invite an outside speaker like me to come in and talk about a specific topic. And I did one about 6 months ago for a private group. All the it was CEOs only. 45 or so people who did business at Fort Meade, which means one of two major clients, right? And what was good, they let me stay the whole lunch, but what, you know, after I talk for 20 minutes or so, what they do is share information on deals coming down the pike and who's going to partner with who.
Hmm.
And those things are really cool because these people really share information amongst. It's a little community, and you know, they're obviously concerned about their own company's growth, but unless you share that information, other people aren't going to share it with you, and you'll never find the right deals to partner up on.
Yeah, and I think small businesses in particular like to talk to each other and like to, you know, and need to as well. It's just sort of, you know, this may be a little bit of a tangent, but the, you know, when an agency puts out an RFI, you know, those small businesses need to reply to those to make sure that then the subsequent contract is actually a small business contract.
Yeah. You know,
that whole rule of two thing comes into play.
And I just saw something this morning, a Bloomberg report on set-aside business actually going up in 17, but dropping down not quite precipitously, but perhaps precipitously if the trend continues in 18.
So, oh, that'll be interesting. I'll have to find that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll share it with you if I'm allowed.
Okay.
All right. You know, when we were talking about this before the show, you mentioned a couple other deals that, or a couple other companies that may be looking for those larger acquisition type scenarios.
Well, you know, it sort of starts with the GDCSRA deal.
Right.
And, you know, you had CACI and SAIC both were in that first round of the auction and the competition for that before.
Right, CSRA. They didn't have cash.
They didn't have cash. They were doing it. But the fact that both of them, and then CACI came back really aggressively there in the second round, but the fact that both of them were willing to put up their stock and their cash to that level to, you know,
to bulk up.
Yeah, I mean, it really tells me that they're ready to make some big deals. Now, who their targets are, you know, I'm very bad at picking who's going to be acquired. But I think you'll see them do something. I mean, CACI always is doing deals, but I think here in the last 4 or 5 years, they've done some real, you know, significant ones that changed the company. You know, when they bought 6-3, and then they, you know, when they bought the L3 business. So they know how to make sort of game changing deals, and SAIC as well. You know, they acquired, I think, Cytor and some others, but I think they both show that they've got the resources and they've got the guts to really roll the dice. So it'll be fun to watch those two companies over the next year.
Yeah, but you also mentioned that there's not specifically by name, smaller deals coming down the pike due to hotness of specific areas.
Oh, yeah. We're seeing a lot of deals around Intel. We're seeing, you know, cloud services, cloud, you know, in its whole range. You know, cloud is a big bucket of the things that agencies need. Artificial intelligence, you know, cyber, of course, everybody's trying to add cyber. And with that, analytics, a lot of times, those are kind of the big hot areas we see because the agencies are spending more money there.
Yeah, I've had a number of probably 3 or 4 small companies approach me to help them with deep dive data analytics kind of things in the last 2 or 3 months. So there's interest from, and I'm relatively small companies. We're talking 20, 30 people max for a couple of these companies, yeah. But you know, they've been periphery on the government market. Now they want to, you know, just dive.
Yeah.
So, but it, you know, I tell them and you tell me, you know, high risk, high reward.
Yeah.
But you know, you look at the risk factor first, if you're betting your company on this.
Yeah. And you see too that, you know, not just the hot areas, but like, KeyW, you know, acquired Sotera last year. And a big driver of that was KeyW's got all kinds of great capabilities. They didn't have a lot of contract vehicles. Sotera did. And so that really, you know, KeyW is one that should be positioned for a lot of growth. But that also, I think, will make them, they're probably an attractive takeover target, too, for somebody. That's one to watch kind of on, they could potentially be on both sides of that coin next year.
Yeah, I mean, if they have the part of the problem here though is retaining the right personnel to make the deal worthwhile in the long run. Contracts are great, but if you don't have people, you know, the right butts in seat,
that's right.
You know, square peg round hole don't work.
Yeah, well, people told me this when I started, you know, 20 years ago that, you know, the best assets walk out the door every. Most valuable assets walk out the door every day and go home. It's your, you know, it's your people. So
yeah. So all right, we're gonna take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Nick right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Nick Wakeman, editor of Washington Technology. You can find Nick on LinkedIn or you can find him at WashingtonTechnology.com. And I suggest you do both. I'm not sure if he'll connect with you on LinkedIn, but who the hell knows? So kind of tied into that M&A scenario, you do a contractor confidence index study at WashTech. Give me a little background on that and tell me where it sits right now.
Yeah, we started, I guess, about 2.5-3 years ago with this survey asking the same set of questions. You know, do you expect to grow? Are you hiring? Do you expect layoffs? You know, general, you know, what do you think the market's headed? You know, what investments you're going to make, that kind of thing. And so we created this index and the first few years, a couple of years, it, you know, the index started at 100, you kind of set that base. And then after that it's sort of, you know, it was bouncing up and down, but stayed right around there. And then this, in this latest one, it just really, you know,
spiked
up to 122.1, and you know, it had gone up after, you know, Trump was elected, and I kind of thought it would come down, but it's staying up there, that 122 level. I think part of it is, you know, there's a lot more clarity around the budget, so I think people are hopeful that way. I think, you know, the Trump administration has a, you know, perception that there's, you know, more pro-business kind of outlook. So there's opportunities that way. But I do think that after those years of sequestration, there's just so much pent up demand, and they now are connecting legacy systems so much more into, you know, your security vulnerabilities. And so they know they have to spend money there. So I think there's a lot of, a lot of confidence there. I mean, like over 60% of the people that took the survey expect their companies to grow, where, you know, a couple of years ago, it was under half thought their companies would grow.
Yeah.
And now, you know, people feel like, the market is really headed in a positive direction. So, but again, I think it's the...
compared to your study, what was it, your first year or your second year, where it was like 30%?
Yeah. Yeah. People were kind of down. But, you know, I really think, you know, I think it would be a great Harvard Business School study or something to look at the impact that...
George Washington Business School.
Please. George Mason, yes.
No. I teach George Washington.
Okay. to kind of look at the impact that sequestration had. Because I kind of feel that, it was too extreme, but just what the impact would be. Because I think was positive and negative to it. Mostly negative, but.
Yeah, and then the question is, you know, is confidence at 122?
Yeah, is it too high? Yeah, I wonder, because, you know, not to get too political, but when you look at the tax cut and then followed by the significant increase in the budget, those macroeconomic factors and what our deficit and the debt, that all is going to come to roost again, and I think that. You know, if you're going to make money, you need to make it now, because 2 years, 3 years from now, it could be a completely different market.
Going back to Trump for a second, I haven't seen any tweets about particular contractors and airplane deals.
No.
In quite a while.
Yeah.
So hopefully somebody said, you really shouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's true. I'd forgotten. Yeah, he really was hitting on some people hard there for a little while.
Yeah. Cost over. I could build this plane for $12.
I wonder if when they start building the wall and they get the cost overruns there, if he'll be tweeting about that.
Well, I know Mr. Pence didn't bring up that particular cost topic with the Mexican president. So, whatever. Top priorities. I like your list. Cyber, cloud, big data, mobility, data center consolidation, emerging AI. I think emerging fairly quick.
Yes.
But what the not big deal intrigues me, because I'm actually speaking at the Government Blockchain Association in a couple, like 2 months or something, somewhere over the summer I'm speaking there. Before I got the invitation, I didn't know there was a government blockchain.
Well, I think that's part of it too. I think that, in part of our confidence index survey, we asked people, you know, what are your customers asking for? And we gave them a list of things. And it's, you know, less than a quarter of the customers are asking about blockchain.
Well, doesn't everybody think it has something to do with Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think so. But I think part of it is it's just maybe too new. We're still trying to, you know, I'm not saying not to pay attention to it. I think if you're looking at this next like 2 year window, I think more opportunities are going to be in those, cloud, cyber, those areas than blockchain.
Do you have any specifics for that top priority area, or just across the board? I mean, you know, think back, 3-4 years, we had companies claiming to be cloud brokers. Do you remember
that? Yeah.
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 What the hell's a cloud broker?
I don't know. I think, you know, with cloud, you know, I think the opportunities there are right now are going to be like helping the migration. That's where, you know, because, you know, moving things there over the pieces and also if you're just, what was the expression they used to use? Oh, if you're just paving the cow path, you're not going to get much, the benefit of it.
Yeah.
But if you can go in there and look at processes and you know, reinvent them and look at security and what your vulnerabilities are.
But how reliant is that growth on the FedRAMP process? Getting that authorization.
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, I think that
NIST set up the guidelines, right?
Yeah.
And GSA is executing them through FedRAMP.
Yeah.
But it's an arduous process because I've been working with two companies trying to go through this.
Yeah, it is. I think that's what they really need to focus on. But if you look at, you know, what DOD is doing with JEDI, they haven't really talked much about FedRAMP there.
No, I haven't seen anything about FedRAMP
I think there's, you know, maybe a changing perception that, you know, if you're doing it in the commercial world, maybe it's okay. Maybe it's already secure. Maybe I think the commercial world is farther ahead than government in how they use the cloud. So.
But I don't think that necessarily makes it more secure.
Yeah.
You know, the process, there's no uniformity of process there.
True.
And there, you know, unless something hits the fan, and we've seen fans spinning big time for, you know, large retailers, et cetera. Was it SunTrust? I heard on the radio this morning, a former employee hacked in and was selling stuff to an untoward source. Here's a thrill. But, you know, without that, I mean, FedRAMP is designed to guarantee the security, the process,
right,
the vendor, right? So I think, you know, and there's a number of things about JEDI that I'm curious about. So maybe we should pick that up on the other side of this. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm having a good time here with Nick. Hope you're enjoying the conversation. Back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here today with Nick Wakeman of Washington Technology. Again, washingtontechnology.com. DOD's JEDI, you know, flashback to the late 60s, early 70s, cream, strange brew, right?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it. There's so much in there, and there's so many things they're trying to do.
Yeah, and the, you know, the first thing that struck me is, you want companies that don't make most of their money from the government.
Right.
So.
Yeah, there's a real bias, I guess, is maybe one way to describe it, against, you know, they want a commercial cloud. And so if you're 75% federal government revenue, are you really commercial? I guess is what they're saying. But to me, what they're doing is they're pushing out GD IT with CSRA, they're not going to be a prime. Leidos can't be a prime. I mean, I think they're kind of eliminating those. Unless, I guess you can, your teammates, but still, I mean, you're saying it's good. So it has to be either AWS or Azure. Those are the only two that could really meet that criteria.
Yeah. You seem to have eliminated the FedRAMP process from this.
Yes. Yeah. That's the other part of it, that they don't talk about it with, I don't know if I have to go back and do a word search. I don't think it's in there anywhere.
Yeah. So my big commerciality is great. Functionality is great. Security is tantamount.
Right.
So just because you have commercial success doesn't mean you have a safe platform.
Right.
So I'm easily confused about technical stuff.
They are requiring, you know, and I guess they don't use the term FedRAMP, but you don't have to have it when you propose, even though AWS is already certified to, you know, has a secret cloud. Azure is probably there now, maybe or will be announcing it shortly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they do have some pretty high security bars in there, but it is a different approach.
Are they NIST based?
I think so. I think,
okay. Well, I mean, you know, they're something.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if they got blessing or deploy the NIST parameters.
Yeah. I think people are still really bothered by it being a single award approach, even though they say, oh, any team, you know, can come together. We're not dictating that it has to be, you know, AWS or Azure. You just have to meet this gateway, but you go through the gateway and it's geared towards, you know, it can only be those two, really.
Yeah.
But the other thing,
they're the only ones that are sized properly to handle something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's a lot of things that aren't in there that they're not talking about, you know, migration, you know, more details on like an exit strategy if, you know, they want to get out of it. That's the part that I find remarkable, or some of those things they're just not talking much about, even though they're
well, you know, Yeah, it'll be fun to watch this one unfold, and I'm wondering when the first round of protests will hit the fan.
Yeah, I imagine pretty soon after the final RFP is out, but they also have these congressional reports they have to get done, and I think the deadline for those are late May. I want to say like the 24th, 25th, and they still say they're going to get the final RFP out in early May, so I don't know, does that mean they'll get the reports to Congress, or are they going to thumb their noses at Congress? I can't see them doing that because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to make your Appropriations Committee angry with
no,
you.
No, that wouldn't be beneficial.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, that's a big contract coming down the pike. So let's talk about contracts in general. Are there any trends discernible in what's popular, what's going up, what's flattening out, what's going down? GWACs, IDIQs, BPAs, yeah. OTAs. OTAs seem to be hot. But
yeah, OTAs are hot, I think, because they're so, you know, their total number isn't huge yet. But I think the fact that it's kind of exploded from, you know, 100 million three, 4 years ago, I'm just to, you know, almost pushing up against a billion. And you even had one that, you know, a cloud one that Transportation Command tried to do as an OTA kind of thing that was a billion, but that got pulled back. I mean, OTA is a really important trend. I think industry and government are still trying to get their arms around how exactly it works and what it is.
OTAs have been around for a very long time.
Yes, but it was
so
very
only
limited.
The cognoscente, yes. Only the truly deeply embedded contractors knew how to weasel these things out of the government.
And, you know, it was R&D type stuff. It's like, oh, can you build me, you know, X so we can test it? I think it's still that way, but what that X can be is broader.
Yeah.
It's getting more into IT, software development, and things like that. Things that they say are not commercially available, I guess, is the thing. GWACs continue to be important, I think. You know, anything that you know, is fast and
easy to use and cheap.
Yeah, and cheap, yeah.
Yeah.
Because agencies, I don't think, want to necessarily invest in building a whole acquisition workforce to develop a contract vehicle. They'll want an acquisition workforce that can help them buy off of other contract vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't necessarily need to own their own vehicle as much anymore.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, one of the things that amuses me is OPM and GSA went to great lengths to set up that HCATS contract.
Yeah.
And then they squished all of the other professional services into the Zero Corp vehicle. But HCATS charges 2%.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's the highest,
yes,
of any contract I know.
Yeah.
And so the result is that schedule is doing great business. I mean, they did like $8 billion last year.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That ain't bad.
No. And I think, you know,
And you don't have to wait for the contract to open.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, God, 2%. I mean, 1% always
Seems
to be like the ceiling.
Souped down to, 29% or something ridiculous. I don't know if that's the exact number or not, but it's low.
Yeah.
0.29, sorry.
Yeah.
She'd shoot me
if
I said 29. Never talk Damn Tower again. I've heard that before. But, you know, but the other thing I hear is, you know, over the last year or so, the NITAC vehicles have not produced as much as they did over the last, say, 4 years or so. Have you heard anything similar?
Not a lot, but I do think that, you know, it could be that, you know, GSA getting their house better in order.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, they brought their rates down, making it easier to, you know, to go through those vehicles. That's probably, but I don't really know that much. I've heard some of what you're talking about, but not a lot.
Yeah. So anything on Alliant or Oasis that you've heard lately or same?
Doing well.
Hoping Casey can come back on the show soon.
Yeah.
So always fun to see him.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah. So that's okay. You know, what any other contracts stick out? I mean, we took a deep look at Jedi, but
well, you know, DoD also has the email cloud contract that they're just
$8 billion worth
billion
of
dollars. The defense enterprise office solutions,
something like that.
DOS.
Yeah,
it made me think one day they were trying to resurrect the original IDIQ contract, DIAS, from way back. But I kind of wish though they had made it another Star Wars type acronym, because those two, you know, they're but I guess it's different parts of DoD doing it. But whatever. It does say how much that the Defense Department, I think, is ahead of the curve in pushing into like commercial cloud and things like that, that the civilian world is going to follow them. And I mean, we haven't talked about this in a while, but I do think back to when Amazon won the CIA cloud.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know, we all said, oh, this is a watershed moment, you know, which is easy to say the name, but I think actually it really was. I mean, I think it's living up to that. Not that it, you know, I've heard mixed things. Some people think it's doing great. Other people think there's problems. And there probably are, but I think that the impact it's had, you know, kind of goes beyond what it's doing itself. I think it changed a mindset.
Yeah. Well, there's only so much we're going to hear about it because it's an IC contract.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that the negative things I've heard.
We're not taking that laundry in public.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the negative things I've heard generally come from people who are competing against AWS.
Yeah.
And the positive things I hear are from people that want to really be close to AWS and be their best friend. So, you know, it's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing goes perfectly and nothing, well.
Yeah, and considering how truly recent AWS entered the market, they've had an extraordinary impact.
Yeah, and I think that's a big message, I think, to the traditional contractors is that, you know, and you know, I think I've talked to you about this before, that I look at our annual top 100 from 2003 to 2017. 60 companies disappeared from the top 100. Now, a lot of them were acquired.
Right.
And
very little attrition.
Yeah.
More being sucked up in a vacuum.
Yeah, but it does say that, you know, some of the companies that are on there now that weren't, you know, Deloitte is way up there. Accenture is way up there. I mean, you do have these companies that, you know, weren't really in the market or you know, you see change. And so I think the companies need to think about, you know, am I just doing the same thing over and over? Even though I'm successful at today, am I going to be successful at it 5 years from now?
Right.
And what is that? What does that take?
What's it mean? Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Nick to wrap up right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Nick Wakeman. You can find Nick, again, on LinkedIn or at washingtontechnology.com. Nick, the money's available. The budget passed.
Yes, the budget did, believe it or not.
None of it fell into my pocket.
Nor mine, Mark.
But I'm hoping I get some of that pass-through money. Contractor gets money. They hire Mark.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, we're literally almost done or halfway through the second or the third quarter of the fiscal and the money's here. So what does end of FY look like? Show me your crystal ball.
My crystal ball. Well, I think it's going to be the feeding frenzy of feeding frenzies at the end of the year. Cause not only, of course, we're late getting the budget. So, but also
at least we have one.
We have one. And you've got this substantial increase. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. And so agencies, you know, it's going to be crazy. It really is, I think.
All right. So crazy or where? I mean, certainly not at EPA or Interior.
No, but I mean, but EPA's, you know, their budgets are kind of flat. So it's still a lot of money to spend.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing with a lot of these agencies is that if you look at the president's FY18 budget proposal.
Oh, I know where they're going to spend it, EPA, and buy new furniture.
That's right. And soundproof phone booths, right?
Yeah. Get that Maxwell smart cone of silence.
You know, I keep waiting for Saturday Night Live or somebody to do that, to resurrect that. But
no, it'd be the Capitol steps.
That's right. But you know, these agencies have got to, you know, you've got to feel whiplash right now, because you know, you get that guidance, even though it never passed, but you think, okay, my budget's going to be cut significantly, and then you start managing towards that, and then all of a sudden, whoa, my budget is back to where it was, or it's bigger. What do I do? You know, you got to. So now they're going in a different direction. Now, of course, there is some talk about they're going to try to claw back some money, so that, you know, but I just don't think that'll make it through through Congress.
I see how.
Yeah,
I mean, number one, by the end of September.
Yeah, know,
how long is their summer recess? Five months.
yeah. So it's you know, tell your people now, no vacations in September. So if anybody did take vacation in September,
well, yeah, that, you know, and you couple the end of FY budget with the increased micro purchase threshold.
Yes,
that's pretty significant.
Yeah, I really need to dig into that, because I think there's a lot, you know, as you know, there's a lot of things going on in that world.
Yeah.
You know, again, Amazon, with Amazon Business, you know, I haven't.
Well, you know, in the 90s, I brought in a lot of companies predicated on SmartPay, or back then Impact Action.
Right.
And it's not a credit card for the government. It's a charge card. They pay it off every month. They get a rebate from the banks. So last year, 2017, they got $300 million back as part of the deal. They get a certain percentage because they pay off every month. You know, David Shea's just done a hell of a job there at the Office of Smart Card Management, or over GSA. Yeah. And the site can give you a lot of information too there. So, but you know, besides crazy, you know, the whiplash action of the agencies going, whoa, dude, got money. Projects queued up. Are we going to see go back to where we were earlier? Are we going to see a lot more action on the GWACs on schedule? Where do you anticipate the and new programs?
Yeah, I think I think the GWACs and the schedules will see. They always do see the bulk of it, because it's already in place. Agencies know how to use it. That's what, you know, and from the contractor's perspective, you have to be where it's easy for your customer to get to you, especially when they were trying to spend money in a hurry, and helping them resurrect some of these programs I'm sure they thought were dead just 3-4 months ago.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, the companies that laid off all those BD people in the last couple of years are paying the price, because those BD people probably took those deals to another employer.
Yeah.
And they've been queuing them up there. So
yeah, that's a great comment. I hadn't thought about that part of it, but you're right. I mean, that a lot of companies, I think, are missing that institutional knowledge and those relationships and things. So
yeah, I mean, you know,
it'll be consultants, you know, help the consultants, I would think, to come in and charge top dollar to help.
I try to find in my connections on LinkedIn BD guys who specialized in particular agencies. So when I get an inquiry about that, I have an immediate resource that I can go to who's been doing nothing but CMS or DISA whatever for, you know, 15 years. That's institutional knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's hard to come by.
Right.
So not only where the bodies are buried, where the programs were, where the programs are going, what legacy systems need maintenance, how they're going to migrate that. You talk about IT modernization.
Yeah.
You know, they know this. Hey,
that's a great point. It goes back to what you were saying earlier when we were talking about M&A, that you're sure you can buy contracts, that's great, but it's the people part of it that it all comes back to.
Yeah. And I know people who like to move, and I know people that don't like to move.
Yeah.
You know, and it tends to be, I think, the younger ones that like some mobility, But if you start in the right company and grow, you know, start with a small company and grow with it, then the opportunities are great. But yeah. So I want to wrap up on a couple of things. First of all, to get back to LinkedIn for a moment, I did a column for you a month or so ago, and this is probably the, you know, I send you my ideas for columns, and right. you know, every now and again, you know, you're back to me in, you know, a few days, because, you know,
yeah.
I imagine you have a few emails, and you have to mull over the idea, what's he talking about this time? I don't, you know. You got back to me pretty quick on that, because I did the column on my biannual census of right. LinkedIn, and we're showing about 1.95 or so million feds on LinkedIn, which is up 450,000 over my 2016 census.
That's what caught my attention, was that number, and that, you know, it shows a change, I guess, that people want to connect, that people want to, you know, share. It's pretty...
Connect, share, or vet.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
That's when I speak at NCMA, that's what I'm talking about. How do you vet contractors and SMEs yeah. on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
So it's
oh
there.
Vent. I was thinking when you first said that, I was thinking vent. I'm like, oh, I got to get in those groups where there are
no
venting.
No,
oh,
yeah,
about
no, no, no. you know, the vetting process. LinkedIn is embedded here. I mean, yeah. we're talking about cloud becoming ubiquitous. LinkedIn has become ubiquitous in this market.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're not there, if your profile isn't really demonstrating who you are and what you do, you damn well better give me a call.
Yeah.
Final thoughts. What should contractors be aware of right now?
Oh, wow. I think with the budget, you know, there's still a lot to learn there, trying to figure out how what your customer needs to do and what their priorities are over the next six months, less than 6 months.
Yeah, five.
I think that's the top priority. I think, you know,
five.
Yeah. I think longer term, I think one of the demographics in the market is going to be a big issue. And I'm not sure what the answer is there, but you know, I think we need to look at the market and, like, you know, why does somebody who's 20 years old now, why would they want to work for a contractor or work for the government, you know, 5 years from now? And I think that's going to be, you know, I've heard for over the last 20 years, oh, this tidal wave of, you know, of retirements and stuff, but I think it's, you know, it's not necessarily.
I started the rumor and I was wrong.
But I think, you know, I don't know. I think that the way people work is changing. And
actually, I think I started the rumor in WashTech in one of my articles.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, 40% of the senior executive service was eligible for retirement. I said, here it comes.
Yeah.
And I was, what, 10 years too early?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that's about when I wrote it.
Yeah.
Might have been one of my first columns for you.
Maybe. I'll have to go back and look. But I do think that's a big issue.
Yeah. Getting, you know, how exciting is working for the government? Well, it's as exciting as you want it to be. And you can pick your area of expertise because there's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah. And I think what the government does, I mean, I think it's not necessarily the content of the job, because, I mean, you talk about big problems, you know, challenges. If you want to be pushed to the limits of your abilities, you're not going to find more opportunities out. You know, the government is where you want to be.
Yeah.
It's the challenge. It's more, I think, cultural things, you know, work schedules, flexibility, you know, how, you know, it's more of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, because you see on the business side that, you know, there's some companies that will probably never significantly do federal work because they're going to get frustrated with the rules and regulations. I think that's why OTA is sort of bubbled up, because, oh, here's a way that I can do business without following the FAR.
Yeah, but on the back end, you still have certain requirements
right.
as a contractor.
Yes.
So you may be able to skirt the FAR, but beware what you wish
for. It's a complicated marketplace.
Yeah. So. Which to me makes it cool. I think the same thing would apply for Virginia. When I'm talking to people in Maryland about this, I say federal government's the largest employer, single employer in our state, but the largest industry in Maryland is